Sahana vavatu, sahana bhunaktu, sahaviryan karavavahai, tejasvinavadhitamastama vidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Okay, page 123. Rajanath, what is this Mayavad philosophy? My intelligence does not understand it. Babaji, try to understand it soberly and carefully. The Maya Shakti is a perverted reflection of the Sarup Shakti, internal potency. The Maya Shakti cannot enter the spiritual world. The Maya Shakti is the controller of the material world. Because he is bewildered by ignorance, the soul enters the material world. Spiritual things are real and do have an independent, separate existence. However, the Mayavad theory does not accept the reality of spiritual things, right? So they're supposed to be spiritualists, but they can't accept spiritual things. Right, so actually what it is they're anti-form and person, all these kind of things. Anything that's personal, anything that exists, they're against. Does that make sense? So that's how you can see they're technically Buddhists. Right? The Mayavad theory declares that the individual spirit soul is actually Brahman. Right, so now it's non-different from God, right? And it's only by the influence of Maya that he thinks he is different from Brahman. Right? So the Mayavad theory declares as long as he is under Maya's influence, the soul thinks he is an individual soul. But when he becomes free of Maya's influence, the soul learns that he is actually Brahman. The Mayavad theory declares that when Maya's influence ceases, the individual soul also ceases to exist. Right? You see, it's total contradiction here. The soul is Brahman. Right, but under the influence of Maya, then he doesn't know he's Brahman. You know, fine. But then, when that influence stops, he also stops. So if he's Brahman, Brahman's eternal, then why wouldn't the soul be eternal? You understand? They completely flip on this. Right? Lord Chaitanya points this out to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. You say he's non-different from the Lord, but at the same time he doesn't exist. If he's non-different from the Lord, he's eternal. But at the same time they say he's not, he doesn't even exist, let alone be eternal.
What they mean to say maybe is that the jiva emerges in the Brahman, and because he now merges in the Brahman, that particular one soul has decreased the count now, and therefore he has become Brahman. Therefore, in that sense, the individual soul ceases to exist. Because it becomes
Brahman
now. Could be like that.
Which side are you taking here?
I'm speaking from your side. Just to give the explanation.
Okay, but what is your side?
My side is that we are the servant of Krishna. We are the Jews.
So what's the point of this? What's the point of the point just has been made?
I'm just trying to justify their understanding. That
their understanding.
Yeah.
I see. So, why would we need to justify their understanding? They're an illusion. It's under avidya. So, in other words, it's Krishna's modes of nature that are making them speak what they speak. So, it's not that it has to have a logic to it. You know, it's just like, why does a dog have to chase a cat? Why? It's just their nature. But who made the nature? Why don't armadillos chase cats? You know, you understand? Because Krishna made it like that. So there's no need to justify their position. Does that make sense? Yeah. So what we're trying to understand here is that they have this total contradictory element, that they're saying the soul is God, God's eternal and unlimited. So they're claiming to be that. But at the same time, they're saying that they as a soul don't exist. So you can't have both these positions. Does that make sense? That's the difficulty. Yes.
I guess the argument is that it is exist as a Brahman, but doesn't exist as the individual part of Brahman.
Yes, but then the point is that if you're Brahman, you're Brahman. How can you just be a part of Brahman? We say the Jiva is a part of Brahman.
Right.
But they're trying to say he's the whole Brahman, but then no, but part of Brahman becomes covered. You know what I'm saying? So every step that's contradictory. You know, because this is the point where the philosophy, you know, falls apart. Does that make sense? So that's what we're trying to catch here, is that the key points, you know, where it's not making sense. So that's all of them have this, and it's all at this point, where the material nature meets the spiritual nature, that's where all their difficulties are. Because then they can't distinguish. They can't because they don't see three. They don't see the jiva, the Lord, and the material energy. Or even if they do, to some degree, then they don't give. They reduce the Lord's position and try to raise the jiva's and the material energy's position, like that. So, yeah. So that's the whole thing. Is you're very clear on these points. And then you're very clear how they all connect together as a chintaveda-veda-tattva, right? Because even you have the definition of the soul, God, and the living entity, what is the relationship? So sambandha-gyan doesn't mean just the knowledge, it means how it's related together, right? So that's the point then where we are a chintaveda-veda-tattva. And then the mayavadis, then they have their, you know, advaita philosophy. Because they're saying that that's how it all connects together. Does that make sense? Then you have Vishishta Dwait, Vishuddha Dwait, Dwaita Dwait, and Dwait. Right? So they all have their philosophies there. And that's within Vedanta. And so then these others will have, you know, we can enjoy eternally by following pious activities. So what exactly, you know, they call themselves on that what that philosophy is called, that Mamamsa is called, we just attribute it to Jaimini. Or they have a technical name for it that we don't know. So, yeah. Does that make sense? So the whole point of the Mayavad theory declares that when Maya's influence ceases, the individual soul also ceases to exist. In this way, liberation is thought to mean nirvana, or the soul is merging with the existence of Brahman. If he ceases to exist, he's not there anymore. Right? So, because otherwise, how do you have unlimited become a portion to become, then nothing? You understand? Because the point is, the portion's already a portion, so there's no change. So, all you're doing is removing the illusion of the difference. You know what I'm saying? That the soul thinks, I am material nature, I am the body. You remove that, they understand I'm the soul. But what remains is that how much Brahman you are, that will remain. Right? Does that make sense? So they're taking it beyond that point, that their existence at all. Because if you don't exist, then what's the whole point? If it's all Brahman, then once you merge into Brahman, then what about all the other living entities? How do you define the individual of all these living entities? So then, when do you become liberated? Because you become Brahman, but if Brahman's been covered, then that means a portion's covered. You're not complete, that total unlimited Brahman. So then, until all the living entities come out of illusion, only then will you become liberated? I mean, how does this work?
It doesn't.
That's the whole point. So in other words, it's just enough to make those who identify with being somewhat intelligent that they can maintain their position that they're very special. Right? Because you want to be very special, right? You want to be rich, you want to be famous, powerful, beautiful, you know, knowledgeable and renounced when you want to not get bothered by all the annoying people around you who aren't like you, right? Isn't that how you apply renunciation here? Yeah. So then, but they're not. So the whole, what's the basis of that? I'm the controller and enjoyer. So since you can't do it as karma, then the idea I'm the controller and enjoyer comes up from, okay, then I'm God. You know, doesn't that make sense? I can't make it in the local high school play. I'm not good enough. So therefore, my alternative is I'm going to be an Academy Award winner. And in this way, I will establish my authority. Does this make sense? The guys are losers. They can't make it in karma. Not that's anything special to make it there, but my point is they're not making it there. Or even if they are, they're not happy there. So their alternative is they can't become God by karma, I'll become God by jnana. See, this is the underlying point why they fall for these faulty, what do you call it?
Notions,
yes. That's where they fall for that. Because it doesn't make sense, but because they want that, you know. You understand? It's just like if there's something you're really attached to, and it's obvious it's not going to work, but someone comes up with some idea that actually still doesn't work, but when you hear it and it kind of sounds like it'll work, you immediately accept it. Right? It's because of attachment. So that's the whole thing, is the jiva being attached to the Lord's energies without the Lord. That is the beginning of all the problems. Does that make sense? So we're trying to make one aware of the Lord, aware of our position in relationship too. Then that makes it very, very clear.
So even the example that you give about the pot and the ether.
Yes.
So when the pot breaks, and then they say that the ether merges in the Brahman. But
right.
I don't understand that the ether doesn't become the totality of the sky.
Yes.
The
yeah, it's
the
just that much remains. That much ether is that what was there. It still remains. Yeah, mm-hmm. Same. Like the drop in the ocean, it's not that the drop becomes the ocean. Because otherwise then you'd have two oceans there in one place. You know, how does this work? You know, it'd be pretty good, right? You know. If you could somehow or another work out without having to put it back in the ocean for it to become the whole ocean. Then you just need a drop of water and then you have enough water for your whole country, right? You know. Only problem is even if you came up with this, the mineral water companies would somehow or another, you know, get rid of you and stuff like that. You know, how you say your brakes wouldn't work on that back road or something.
They would liquidate you.
Yes. And then you would merge into the ocean. Yes. Okay.
So, Maharaj, you can say that the jugglery of words is a simple answer to all problems.
Yes. You juggle the words, then that's how it goes. That means it's being used in all the modern things. You have, I think, the technical term is euphemism. You make something that's not so special look special, or even something that's bad look special. You know, like the example, you know, in Bosnia of ethnic cleansing. It sounds really nice, right? Ethnicity is good, and cleansing is good. So, you know. But it's meaning something else, or our famous, what is it? Work is...
Work will liberate you.
Yeah, work will make you free. Yeah, work will liberate you. You know, it sounds great. But the whole point is it's just word juggling. So then you can use it emotionally. You know, for the jnanis, they use it intellectually. So it's just the same thing. You're just juggling words.
So mainly, can we say that it is mainly the sign of identification with the mind?
Yes, you're identifying with the mind. Basically, it's identifying with the mind, but more, it's identifying I'm the controller and enjoyer. Mm-hmm. So, however, However we want to be, but we're not, then we use word jugglery to make it sound like we're okay. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like the sour grapes principle. You want the grapes, you can't get the grapes, so you say, oh, they're sour anyway. Right? And then you don't feel bad.
It's working.
It works, yeah. So that's the whole thing. Because of that identification with control, then you feel better.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. The Prabhupada says, the small Buddha, he wants to become a billionaire or something like that. And the big Buddha, he wants to become one of God.
Oh, this the small Buddha wants to become a billionaire, and the big Buddha wants to become God. So therefore, that the simple definition of karmis and jnanis. Right? That's funny.
We had earlier concluded how the Jains are good mathematicians, but Mayavadis are very bad at maths and physics because they do not have the concept of volumes and everything.
Yes, yes. No, they don't seem to have so much concept of that. But.
When we analyze this, it really brings out the idea that the prayojana is so important. You
know, yes.
The whole sambandha is based upon this.
Sambandha, yes. Because the point is you have Krishna and you have his creation. Right? So then the whole point is the creation is Krishna. It's not different from him. But the point is by expanding, then you can increase the happiness, the ananda. So that means there's him, himself. He is sambandha. He is jnana. Because everything is him. So in jnana, you're defining what everything is and what's its relationship. But it's all him. So he is jnana. Right? Then you have his energies. But now to expand them means then it has to be about the interaction with the energies. Because he himself is complete in himself. So by extending the energies means instead of the focus on himself, because that's what already is... is that, and since he is the energies anyway, means already everything's focused on himself. So then how you're increasing the ananda is the energies expand, and then the focus is on the energies. Does that make sense? But now you have to have a way to connect his position and the position of the energies so that you have that interaction. So that's Abhideya. Right? So that means all the shastras, everything about the shastras defining Krishna's position, his energies, and how they interact. There isn't anything else being described. That's why when Lord Chaitanya says the Veda is only discussing sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana, it's not just a comment, it's the comment. Right? Because even you see the Mahavakya, A-U-M, is the Lord, his energies, and the Jiva. Right? So that's the whole point. And then the Jiva, he's the instrumental, so he represents that interactive aspect. Right? So, this whole trying to... Yeah. So it's due to applying one's attachment not connected to Krishna that generates Maya. Means generates our being involved in Maya. Maya already exists as an energy of the Lord. So then it's by Krishna's will that we're put under Maya. It doesn't mean that we weren't in Maya and then Krishna put us under Maya. It's because we have chosen not to see things connected to Krishna. Then we'll be a disturbance to those who do see everything connected to Krishna. So by Krishna's will, then we're given a separate place to be. That's the material world. Right, so that frees all those who are on the transcendental platform from being bothered by small and big mudas. Is that... Yeah. Is that something?
Yeah.
So this is where it goes. And so because of this material attachment, right, this envy and attachment, because you're envious of Krishna's position, so that's why you have to be God, you have to be the big God. And then the attachment to enjoyment, because he's the enjoyer, you want to enjoy it. Right? So that becomes the difficulty. You know, just like we see with Kaliya, right? So then the sacrifice is offered to Garuda, and then Kaliya thinks, why Garuda should get it? I'll take it. Right? So that principle of that envy and attachment, they go together very, very nicely. Right? Basically, one doesn't work without the other. Because you see, even though it's based on envy of God's position that I am God, you still hear them talk about Brahmananda. So that happiness is already included. Right?
Each generation.
Yeah. So, yeah. 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 So it comes up, yes. So then, yes. Okay, does that make sense? In this way, the Mayavad theory does not accept the existence of a pure individual spirit soul free from Maya's clutches. Right? Because they don't think that they exist in the first place. But the point is that Brahman is already there as the unlimited and already Ananda. Then what's the part with the part being not an Ananda? You know, because they're saying they will become the whole Ananda, but the whole Ananda is already the whole Ananda. Otherwise, if that's the thing, is no, until that soul joins, it's not complete. Because part of the sky is in the pot, so it's not complete. So does that mean then the whole Brahman can't enjoy itself as Brahma, as the Ananda being Brahman, until that soul merges back? And if that's the case, what about the unlimited souls that are here? So that means then, will you ever, you know, will there ever be Ananda? Right? So it's not a very well thought out philosophy. But that it's designed like that. Lord Shiva was empowered to be able to preach a philosophy that made no sense, but the intellectuals accepted as logical. That requires the achintya potency. The Mayavad theory also declares that when he incarnates in the material world, Brahman must take shelter of Maya and accept a body made of matter. Brahman thus does not have a spiritual form and must accept a form made of matter. But why would he need to? Since he's complete in himself, why would he come here? Right? So that means there's desire, there's all these different things that come up. And then if these are there, that means you're dealing with personality. So if there's personality and desire, why can't there be form? Right?
Yes. They say he has a form just made of matter.
Yes, but why would Brahman have to take a form? That's my point, is if he has desire and he's a person, then why doesn't he already have a form?
It makes then Prakriti more powerful than Brahman? Because if he comes here, he has to follow the rules here.
Yes, yes. Yeah, no, these are all things that are there. That's why it says the Mayavadis are offensive.
Is this their most offensive assertion?
Yes. Yes. Like that. Yes, that's a good point. So this point itself is the most, you know, how you say? Illusion. This is the biggest offense, that they think his form is illusion. Right? He's not a person, it's not all. So, what is that? Isn't there a Chaitanya Charitamrita Bengali about how the Mayavadis are just offensive?
Huh?
Mayavadi, Krishna Aparadi. Yeah. So they're just by nature offensive. That's just their natural identity. Right? Now everybody needs an identity, so. Thus, Brahman accepts the different material forms of his incarnations. Descends to the material world, performs very great deeds, leaves his material form behind, and returns to his own abode. But why would he do this? That they're not going into. Because they don't want to go into they're a person. They don't want to go into God's a person. Right? So that's the whole point. Because if God's a person, then he's big and you're not. And if you're a person, you're the idiot because you've come here. Right? You know. So they want to avoid all this because of their... Yeah. However, the Mayavadis offer one kindness to the Supreme Lord. Okay, they give one.
John.
John, yes. I say. They say the individual souls and the incarnations of Brahman have one difference. They say that the individual souls are dependent on their past karma, are pushed into the gross material body against their will, and carried along by the strong current of their past karma, are forced to suffer old age, death, and rebirth. On the other hand, the Supreme Lord accepts a material body, material identity, material name, material qualities, and other material things voluntarily, by his own will. And by his own will, at a certain time, he abandons those material things and becomes again manifest as pure spiritual consciousness. So the point is there's a will there. But how does Brahman have will if it's just, you know, this oneness, this eternalness, no qualities? So that's the thing. There's all these contradictions. Yes.
Even this, they do this because if they have to be special, they have to identify something special. For that reason, at least they have to give that.
Oh, Brahman's special because then they can be non-different. Otherwise, then how do you call each other? Narayana, Narayana. But otherwise, we'd have to, like Prabhupada said, yeah, Mudha, Mudha. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, probably wouldn't go down so well. I said, it's like that one point. I didn't work so hard for so many years for someone in medicine, you know, as a degree, for someone to call me Mister. Right? So in the same way, you work so hard to become renounced and detached, you expect to be called Narayan, right? Yeah. On the other, okay, we've had that. Although he performs activities, the Lord is not forced to accept karmic results of those actions. All these are the mistaken conclusions of the Mayavadis, right? Still, he comes by his free will, but still he's accepting a material body and all this and that. So, as it said, the fools or the mudas think when Krishna descends, he accepts a material form. Yeah.
Baldev Vidya Bhushan says, Lord accepts the best form of illusion. He is the best form of illusion. That's what their philosophy is.
The best form of illusion. Yeah. So then that, he's the best form, and they're Narayan, so their form is the best form of illusion also. So then. Yeah, what is it? My illusion's better than your illusion, right?
So, in the previous speech.
Sorry?
In the previous speech.
We've turned the page. We should not have turned the page.
Summary of
Adhikarna 16. Oh, it's up there, okay. Summary of Adhikarna 16. Vishaya. Digressing for the moment from the main topic, the author of the sutras next considers the nature of the Lord's incarnations. In the Gopaltapani Upanishad, it is said, Eko vasi sarvaga krishna idya eko pi san bahudha yo vabhati. Lord Krishna is the worshipable, all-pervading supreme controller, and though he is one, he manifests in many forms. In the Vishnu Puran 1-2-3, okay. It is said, Eka neka swarupaya stula shukshma mate mata nama. I offer respects to the Lord who has unlimited forms and who is both subtle and gross. It appears that the one Lord as the Amshi appears as many Amsha or parts of Amshas. So the doubt. Shamshaya. Are the incarnations of the Lord, such as the incarnation Matsya, part and parcel of the Lord in the same way the individual souls are? Right? So now they're trying to get, okay, well, it's God, like they said. Or are they different from the individual souls? Purvapaksha. So their argument. There is no difference between the individual spirit souls and the incarnations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's their idea. Because then that way they become God. Some way they want to become God. Siddhanta, the Sutrakar gives a conclusion as follows. Sutra 2344. Prakasha divan naivam para. Prakasha, light, adhi, beginning with, vat, like, na, not, evam, thus, para, the supreme. The avatars are not the jivas, but are the Lord. Just as the sun and the firefly are called light, but are different. Footnote 72. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes the unequal status of the Lord and thereby confirms the difference between the jiva and the Lord. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the master of all potencies. He is controller of the Surup Shakti, internal potency, Jiva Shakti, and Maya Shakti. These potencies are all his obedient maidservants. He is their master. Whatever he wishes, they do. That is the nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The individual soul has a very tiny drop of these qualities. He is subordinate to the Lord's other potencies. The word Maya is used in the Dasamula, in the verse quoted in the beginning of this chapter, to mean not only the Lord's material potency, but also his internal potency, Sarup Shakti. The dictionaries explain, Miyate ananya iti maya. That which measures is called maya.
Here it is.
Yes, I agree.
Okay, thank you. According to this explanation, the word maya refers to the potency of Lord Krishna that manifests the spiritual world, the individual souls, and the material world, right? Because the Sarup Shakti is the Lord's maya, right? His potency. And by that, everything is measured, right? So therefore, then, everything seems to have its position, its size, everything comes from that. And the comparison of one to the other, and all these different things. So, you know, that one is light, one is dark. Is that Krishna's great, we're small? All these things come from this. Because otherwise, it's only within the energy that you need to define these things. Because Krishna himself is himself. So there's no need to define. Right? Because he knows himself. He is consciousness. So there's nothing to define. Right? But we see that when Krishna expands his energies, now there's all the relationships there. Therefore, you need the definition. So Sarup Shakti is what then defines everything, how everything is measured. Now you can measure it within the spiritual or you can measure it within the material. Does that make sense? So like that. And you also, as you see, you can measure within the Tathasta Shakti. Right? Does that make sense? So you have the totality of the Tathasta Shakti, but you also have the transformation of the Tathasta Shakti that makes the individual jiva. Right, just like the internal potency, it's transformation, you get the spiritual world. The transformation of Maya, you get the material world. Right? Does that make sense? So, the point is that the spiritual world, those things are eternal. The jivas, they're eternal. The material world, the material nature itself is eternal, but the manifestations, the transformations, are temporary. Right?
When it mentions that... Sarup Shakti, Jiva Shakti, Maya Shakti are the obedient servants of Krishna. So, when it mentions Jiva Shakti, it means the overall Tattvasya Shakti is obedient to Krishna, not the transformations as Jivas, right? Because the Jivas...
Why wouldn't the Jivas be submissive to Krishna's position?
Because that's the reason why they're in the material world, because they have rebelled against him, so they're in the material world. So some
are
in the
but are they supposed to be?
They're not supposed to be. They're supposed to be in the spiritual world.
Okay, so then is that an imposition upon them to be in the spiritual world? To be in the spiritual world, is it an imposition?
No.
And to be in the material world is a natural position. Or to be in neither is the natural position, and so therefore then they just merge into Tathasta Shakti.
They have to be in the spiritual world, necessarily.
So is it natural or not?
It's natural.
It's natural. Okay. So being natural, then the whole point is that why we would say that they're not by nature subservient to the Lord.
Because I was comparing the other two potencies. Internal potency is eternally obedient. Maya Shakti is eternally obedient. It's only the Jiva Shakti. Then.
But they're in between because they have to function under energy. So it's either under this one or under that one. You understand? So that way they're always dependent. That's why the jiva is das anu das. Right? Because they're servant of the servant. It means the internal potency is the servant. We're the servant of that internal potency. We're not directly the servant of Krishna. That's why it says anyone who says they're my servant is not my servant. But who's the servant of my servant, they're the servant. Does that make sense? Yeah. So we're always dependent.
Marriage, when we say about measurement, right? Yeah. But it seems that it is important to measure our advancement in Krishna consciousness.
Yes, but do we measure that by a Mahamaya or Yogamaya?
Yogamaya.
Yes. So in other words, we do just like this. We have this pot. Okay. So now how do we measure this pot? Means we're going to deal with this pot. In doing so, we're going to measure it.
Yes.
Right? What's its value is? What it can do?
Yes.
But now, do we do that according to this miyate as Mahamaya or the miyate as Yogamaya?
Yes.
That's the choice. But we always have to deal with everything and measure everything according to Maya. We can't do it on our own. Right? How do you compare everything to 1/10,000th the tip of the hair? Okay, this is about, you know, so many billion, trillion times bigger than me. You know, so is that, you know, and that one over there is, you know what I'm saying? How do you do? So it's through his energies that you measure. Right? So what are you measuring? It's in comparison to him. So with the internal potency, then the measurement is direct. With the external potency, the measurement is indirect. Because you're measuring in connection with Krishna. But in internal potency, in yoga maya, you're seeing it as non-different from Krishna. And you're seeing that aspect of how it's to please Krishna. So I have this water pot. Right, and so I could keep this water in this pot, and of water pots like that means of water pots. Then it's a nice water pot. It's convenient. It's got a handle, has a lid, it has a spout, so it's easy to pour. You know, I don't have to take the lid off to pour it, and all this and that. So it's very convenient. It's made out of copper, right? So its convenience is good. It's copper. It's made out of copper, so the copper will purify the water, right? Like that, it'll kill all the bacteria, it'll lighten the water, all the heavy metals will mix with the oxidization of the copper and drop to the bottom of the pot. That's why you see the spout is up from the bottom. It never always goes to the bottom, because on the bottom is where all the heavy metals are. Right? That's why if you put water in the copper pot and immediately drink it, you'll see it has whatever the nature of the water is. You let it sit for 2 hours, then you drink it, you'll see it's light. Huh? I said, yeah, so the sages always drink copper light. Right? it's the drink of sages. Right? Yeah. Okay, so now you can consider, and of all the things for keeping water in, a paraphernalia, copper is the most dear to the Lord. Better than gold or silver. The things you keep the water in, then it's that. You can put it in, you keep it in the copper, you want to offer it in a you know, gold, you know, how you say?
Chalice
or
vessel,
yeah, something like that, whatever you're doing with it, then you pour it into there. But it's having sat in copper that's the best, right? So then, now looking at all that, now is that, is using this copper pot for the puja, and for serving the Lord, then a first-class item, right? So by the measurement of Maya, then I see it in connection with the Lord. So now that measurement becomes Yoga Maya. But now if I take all those same things and it's thing and it's good for health and this and that, because you drink the copper water, it's good for liver, it's good for so many different things, this, that, blah. You know, it increases the pitta, so it helps in digestion. It does so many different things. So I could just consider this is a great pot for me.
Yes.
Then the measurement then is Mahamaya. Measuring you're going to do through the Lord's energy. It's just a matter of whether it's done under Yogamaya or under Mahamaya. But measurement will be there. If you don't measure, then how do you tell anything? Knowledge means you're distinguishing between things or seeing the commonality. Because the intelligence just see what's common and what's different. Does that make sense? Like I can see, okay, I need to put the papers, so the papers on their own, you know, don't hold themselves up. like that. I don't know the mantra, like that. So therefore, the table being different, it holds things up. I put the papers on the table. But at the same time, I can tell that the sameness between this pile of papers and that, and so then I put this one over there and that they stay in there. But at the same time, it can tell the difference because this is the unread pile, this is the red pile. Is that? So that's what intelligence does. But then the mind decides if that's good or not. So it's with the mind we're deciding whether it's Yogamaya or Mahamaya. Because the intelligence will just say it's this or that. You know what I'm saying? So, it's like something you want to do and your intelligence says don't do it. But it's the mind that will decide. And then yes. then it's other elements, within your external existence that will get the rap for your decision. Does that make sense? Yeah.
In the spiritual world, this analysis is not required because it's naturally for Krishna everything.
Yeah, it's for Krishna. That means those who naturally analyze everything in connection to Krishna, they're in the spiritual world. Those who naturally analyze everything not connected to Krishna, they're here. Mm. So you're trying to switch from analyzing from here to there. That's all. So that's why the primary aspect is the most important aspect. So the contemporary practice, or you just say the mundane practice, but especially the modern practice, where everything's about the external, right? Like that. But the whole point it leaves out the principle. You know what I'm saying? So, now if we say, okay, we have an objective, just for some fun. We're studying Sutra 2.3.44, okay? Now, according to the teaching method, the modern, what is the objective of this study, of this particular sutra? What will I take it?
I can take that I am the Lord.
You should learn that.
Yeah, from the contemporary education. And
we're not talking about that. We're talking about what it is here. So you're supposed to learn that the jivas are not the Lord, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So that's fine. And that's not a bad thing. It is knowledge you're supposed to know. But why should you know that knowledge?
To pass the exam.
Yes, exactly. How you say? Cutting to the essence here? Then yes. You understand? But the point that we ourselves will be convinced about the Vaishnava philosophy and give up our attachments to Nirvishesha and Shunyavad.
That's a bonus.
That's a bonus. That's not actually the essential point. That won't be measured. So the point is when we take objectives, they're always something that's externally perceivable by the senses. So it has to be based on pratyaksha, not on shabda. So therefore, that's the difference. The Vedic Academy, it's what's the effect from shabda. The modern, it's what's there from pratyaksha. And if you want to make it intellectual, you throw some anuman in for some fun, but there's no need of shabda. Like that. Because whatever is accepted by, the particular chair or whatever is accepted by the community of intellectuals, that is the shabda.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, ma'am.
But if it's devotees, we take the modern approach.
Yes.
Then?
That's hence the the difference. Because the Vedic approach, you don't do that.
Yeah.
Not that you don't use those as symptoms to tell something, but what you're trying to get at is what is going on. That's how you see. You can tell by symptoms, but you're trying to see what's beyond that. But that point is that then requires qualification. Well, the other one is simply, you've done this, you've studied this, you've got the degree in that, you've done the teaching course, now you teach it, you're good. You know what I'm saying? So there's no depth. what the Vedic is it's supposed to change. Like, it's just like, okay, now if we take from the modern, okay, the first studying the first nine cantos, the Bhagavatam, then means you have all that knowledge. You know, specific knowledge, this conversation, that conversation, whatever is considered importance of the secondary aspects by the particular people that are involved that are creating the degree, yes. But what has Prabhupada mentioned that from reading the first nine cantos, what's the benefit?
Liberation.
You get liberation.
Self-realized.
You get self-realized. Because then you know who you are, so you can appreciate who Krishna is in his pastimes in the 10th canto. And then the 11th and 12th cantos tell you how, as a liberated person, how to live that your life so that you can always see Krishna. So that's the that's what you're looking for. Does that make sense? So that's the difference. Yes.
So for the one even the second canto, that one who is not convinced of the path, and he should not go beyond that second canto.
Canto, yes. Yes.
So you may approach to academic perspective only after the second canto.
Up the second canto, yes, yes. That's a good point. Nice point. Yeah.
Prabhupada does the same with the Bhagavad Gita in the introduction. He says, unless you are at least correctly accepting Krishna as the Supreme Lord, you won't be able to understand the Bhagavad Gita.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah. Same principle. So that's the thing. It's a different approach. So that's the whole thing, is that this measurement, it's also, are you only seeing the secondary measurements, or are you seeing the primary measurement? Right? So in other words, I'm seeing all the secondary aspects of the pot, but am I seeing in connection with the main measurement of Krishna's pleasure? Right? Because therefore, as it says, since the Shastra says, Krishna prefers water stored in a copper pot. Right? So therefore, since it's about him, I would use that. Does that make sense? Yes.
As we speak about devotees.
Right.
So what's their, where are they going wrong? In the objective, I mean, in Sambandha, Videyo, Prayojanitam.
Yes.
Using that method.
Yes. Means, see, as all devotees will accept that Krishna's God, we're the soul, we're not the body, we're servant of Krishna, and that the process is chanting Hare Krishna, and the ultimate is developing love for God. Whether they can articulate that much or not, but we see that from Mukunda Maharaj going to the west coast of San Francisco, you know, for some months before, when Prabhupada was going to arrive, when Prabhupada arrived, there were 50 hippies there that all knew this and could say that, and they would say that. Right? Then, after that, then you have so much detail. Difficulty comes up is in the detail in all these things. You know, what does that mean? How is the process and all that? That's where the problem comes up. We may get distracted by the idea that mundane academics, mundane social standards, mundane economics and politics and, you know, all these things are important, and because of the excellence of their quality, that's what makes the excellence of bhakti. Right? Does that make sense? So, see what happens here. Let's go back to the pot. You know, since the discussion started with the pot, it's always about pots, right? But this time it's a copper pot rather than a clay pot.
And it makes sense because it's my pot in space.
Yes, yes. But theirs is a clay pot. This is a copper pot.
It's a copper pot.
Yeah. So, you know, because the space remains. The copper pot you can break. This you can't break. So therefore the space remains. So the jiva is separate. Like this. Yeah? Okay. So, now we're measuring, right? We're looking at the quality of the copper, its effect on the water, as we said, the shape of the pot, the handle, the spout, the stand, all these different things. Like, the clay pot has no stand. It rolls over. It's a problem. That if you want to get water, I have to take the top off. It has its position, its purpose, because it will cool the water, while this one won't so much. Anything kept in a container will get a little cooler, but because the copper pot, because what is that? The water goes out.
Evaporates?
No, it evaporates once it gets out, but there's that osmosis or something? It goes through the clay, and when it gets to the outside, it evaporates. It actually makes the water cooler, like that. You know, so you have different things that are considerations. So we're looking at the copper pot for right now. So we're considering those. Those aren't primary. They're secondary. So now when we see that based on the primary, that this is pleasing to Krishna, these are the secondary aspects he prefers. This is how he likes to be served. Like, I want to serve him. These are secondary aspects I can serve him through. Right? Then the whole thing becomes considered as primary. Even though you can still make the distinction, but it's good as, just like iron and fire. You can still tell it's iron, but it acts like fire. Right? But in the same way as we take it from the material, we take all the consideration, now it's in connection with us. There is no primary. Right? So it's just the secondary. Does that make sense? But because of the aspect of cause and effect, what is it called? Satkaryavad. Right? So therefore, because those are there in Krishna, Krishna and his energy, so the primary and secondary, you can still see primary and secondary even within the secondary. Right? So there'll be the elements of health or the elements of practicality or these kind of things. And therefore then the shape and the ingredient, what it's made out of?
The materials,
yes. Then you've defined in this way. So you can still see that. But the point is it takes on simply a secondary nature. Because it's not in the fire of the primary. Does that make sense? So in that way, then, these distinctions are there. That's why it becomes difficult, because of this aspect of Krishna is non-different. You know, so this Achintabheda Veda Tattva and the Satkaryavad aspect, because of that, so that's where it becomes seeming confusing. Right? So unless Krishna reveals, you won't know. So just to know the facts, that's only the secondary. Right. Yes. No? Somebody.
Staying
with the pot.
We hear that the primary, Krishna likes his water kept in a copper pot.
Right.
And some devotees will just accept it. Okay, Krishna likes it. That's the primary.
Right.
Whereas some will only accept it if all of the secondary reasons are given. He likes it because it does this and because it does that.
Yes, 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 of course.
Why is that?
It's just the level, because one's an individual. That's the whole thing. It all comes down to we're personal. But then it's according to your position, the modes of nature and everything like that. Is it, you know, so it comes down that way. So because Krishna, being everything, everything has all these unlimited points. So it can be discussed on those levels. So you could say the grossest of that, let's say, is the Tantra. You know, that they bring everything down to bead syllable and it means this and that. Though it's very subtle. So we see in the Vedic, even its grossest is quite subtle. Like the universal form, that's considered the gross form of the Lord, though it's beyond the physical. You know. So. So it's just a different where the measurement is, it's shifted up. You know? How you say it's just like, let us, you know, just like on a general thing. Let's say we're taking in the class. Now, if we did according to, let's say, a traditional standard, then after the test, no one, by that measurement, by, let's say, what you did to the training of the previous generation, that test, you measure the scores, then you find that no one actually passed very well. But now if we use a contemporary thing where we use the curve, we simply shift it all down and we just take it that whoever got the highest score, that's the A, and then it goes down from there. So even though by previous measurement that was a C, you know, and the guy that had the D, now that becomes, so the C becomes an A, the D becomes a B, and the F becomes a C. You know, so like that. So that's there. Or if we look at it, let's say you have the measurement of what you need for postgraduate study. Right? So the point is that you could use that, or you could use what's there for undergraduate, you could use for high school, or for this, you know, like this. So there's so many different things you would take. You know, or the measurement, let's say, for kids. The kid's doing it, he's writing this A that takes up half the page, and it's not very nicely done, but we'll say excellent, because it actually kind of looks like an A.
Recognizable.
Yes, recognizable. So you'll say that's good, because of the measurement. So the problem is by the modes of nature and all that, then we have different measurements based on our conditioning. So that's why the Vedic gives the measurements at least minimum in goodness. But the actual, because that's the natural form that would be there of the secondary, that's the pure goodness. Right? Because when that secondary, which is in goodness, is engaged in the Lord's service, it becomes pure goodness. The Lord's always pure goodness. He is Vishuddha Sattva. So same way, when that knowledge or anything else is engaged in the Lord's service, it comes to that transcendental position. But if it's not engaged, then it's external energy, it's Maya. Does that make sense? So measurement's always there. It's just a matter of how do you define what measurement you use. That's the whole point, because measurement will be there.
Yes. In this connection, the four aspects, within the four aspects, Prabhupada said, like, the purity is the first, means the purity is connecting to Lord with pure goodness, then only you can, the utility is the principle will work.
Yes, yes, because then it's yukta, it's connected. That's a very good point. Can you say that again?
The principle means, like, you'll be able to distinguish what to use, what not to use.
What not to use, yes. Because unless there's goodness, you can't tell. But even if you're using something less, if you're sincerely connecting to the Lord, because that's the best you have,
yes.
You know, then it works. But the point is as you progress, you know, it's just like we had that example that Prabhupada had mentioned, that even the wine, you understand Krishna is the pure water in the wine, or just the taste of that wine that you get, why you're attracted, that's Krishna. And so someone can be elevated through that process. And I've heard of at least one, if not two, examples of that. I mean, I think so. I don't even remember who it was, but someone was telling me. I think someone was telling me that they were that person, and someone else was telling me how Prabhupada had mentioned it about, you know, like this. But within, I think it was 2 weeks. Then they weren't drinking wine anymore. So now, if you say no, but you know, you can see Krishna is the wine, and so we can drink. What? No, but that's then you're not past that platform. So you can't claim an elevated platform and still be doing it. One has to move up. Does that make sense?
Yes.
That's the whole thing. There has to be progress. That's why then you measure. So mode of goodness means now it is of standard that it is offerable to Krishna according to his preference. Below that, it may be offerable to Krishna because of the essential point of it and seeing it in connection to Krishna. So the bhakti aspect is pleasing to Krishna, but the secondary is not. It's a substandard form. But mode of goodness means now that the form that's being used to offer now is of standard. Does that make sense? So then it becomes useful to offer. So that's why mode of goodness is recommended, because the problem is the mode of passion will tend to distract us. It will tend to distract us. Does that make sense? So that's why it's not recommended. If you're in that place, you start there. That's the point. If you're in passion, you start there, connected to Krishna. If you're ignorant, start there, connected to Krishna. But the idea is to bring yourself to goodness as soon as possible.
So, regarding measurement, you see that it's a standard that any area, we find that we have teachers who measure the students, even the parents can measure the kids. You know,
but everybody's measuring.
Yeah,
yes.
Everybody's measuring. Now, in the spiritual life, when we practice, we measure ourselves and we also allow others to measure us. So then, how long should this continue, that we allow others to measure us?
How long should we continue? Try a very relaxed 8. Yeah? No?
Reclining 8.
A reclining 8. We're good? We're not good. So, therefore, in the spiritual world, when we're within the pastimes and we're doing one activity, and Rupa Goswami comes and says to do something else, or something goes wrong in the pastime, so then we get chastised. That should not happen.
But that will technically not happen.
Wrong example. Okay. Okay, Arjuna. He's Narav Narayan. So they have an eternal relationship. They're always doing the pastimes. Does Krishna chastise Arjuna?
Yes.
And the Pandavas are all eternal associates of the Lord. They're all that. Does Draupadi ever judge Yudhishthira Maharaj?
She does. I got it,
Maharaj. Okay.
Thank you.
So, understood in this way, the word Maya refers to the Lord's internal potency, Sarup Shakti, not to his external potency. Lord Krishna is the master of this Maya potency. The individual souls are under the control of this Maya potency. This is described in the following words of the Svetasvatara Upanishad. 4:9-10. Yasman Mayi Srijate Vishvam Etat. Tasmims...
Chanyo.
Oh, so it's... Okay, it's an A. Chanyo Mayaya... San Nirudha. It is very difficult for the conditioned soul, illusioned by Maya and trapped in the material world, to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the controller of the illusory potency, and the creator of the material universes. Mayam tu prakritim vidvan mayinam tu maheshwaram tasya vayava bhutaistu vyaptam sarvam imam jagata. One should know that although Maya, illusion, is false or temporary, the background of Maya is the supreme magician, the personality of Godhead, who is Maheshwara, the supreme controller. In these verses, the word Mayi refers to Lord Krishna, the controller of Maya, and the word Prakriti refers to his complete potency. This glorious quality, being the controller of Maya, belongs to the Supreme Personality of Godhead alone. The individual souls do not possess it. Even the liberated souls cannot attain this quality. In the Vedanta Sutra, right, so even you're liberated, you still don't control Krishna's energy. You're still controlled by him. That's just the way it works. Even the liberated souls cannot attain this quality. In the Vedanta Sutra 4.4.17, it is said, Jagat Vyapara Varjanam. Even after he attains liberation, the individual soul does not have the power to create the material world. End quote. Therefore, the conclusion of Vedanta Sutra is that the individual souls are eternally different from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Jiva Dharma, Chapter 15, Sutra Prakashika. The Sutrakar demonstrates the difference between the jiva and the avatars of the Lord with the help of the sun firefly example. Later in this work, Vedanta Sutra 3.2.20, Vridhi Hrasha Bhaktvam Antar Bhavad Ubhaya Samanjasyad Evam. It is explained that the example of the sun and firefly is accepted in the sense that it illustrates the nature of greatness of the Lord and minuteness of the jiva. Right? So there's something in common, that you're talking about light, but you're talking about it in the context of greatness and smallness. Yeah, right? Okay, footnote 73. Srila Jiva Goswami explains that Swayam Bhagavan Krishna is the source of amshas, kalas, and the purusha forms. All avatars mentioned and not mentioned here, who are portions of the purusha, or are empowered jivas, create happiness in the world whenever it is afflicted by the demons and their ideas. But Krishna is the ultimate form of Bhagavan. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.3.28. These forms mentioned are amshas of the purusha, pumsha, first described. Some of the amshas are actually amshas of two types. Direct amsha forms of the Lord or portions of the amshas. Others are called amshas because of being endowed with a portion of the Lord's shakti, shaktiyavesha. Others are vibhutis, kala. But he who is listed as the 20th avatar, Krishna, is Bhagavan. This means, quote, the form of Bhagavan, who is the source of even the purusha, is Krishna alone. The doubt may arise, is he not included in the list of avatars? Paurava Parye Purava Darbhalyam Prakriti Vad. In a list of items, the previous ones are weaker than the latter ones, as in the case of Prakriti sacrifices. Jaimini Mimamsa Sutra 6554. Right, so it means this: if you say one thing, the latter is the most important. Right, if there's a line of discussion, the latter one is the most important. Like that, yes.
Does this apply to Prabhupada's statements as well? Can we apply to this?
Yes. Well, like you see, is that he's like, let's take Bhagavatam. So then, it's not that. Means for this, it's not that one cuts the other, it's a matter of the essentialness of it. So you see is that what he's speaking in the first six cantos, you start seeing in the second six cantos, then you start seeing he starts to get down more to essence. And then we see in the last, those last, what's in the tenth canto, even more, in those last chapters, the same point becomes set again and again. What would be said once every few cantos starts to becoming said regularly in the first one, then it starts becoming said at least once a chapter, if not sometimes twice. So you can understand from that it's coming later than these, and it's also, it's repeated, it's glorified, so these are just different ways that you can tell something's there. You know, it's just like, let's say, you say, I'd like some water, and then you say, well, actually, no, better I'll take some lemon juice. So now do I take the first one or the second one is more important? So if I bring you water, you said water. No, but I said lemon juice afterwards. Yeah, but that's after. So the first one you said, that's the most important. No, it's the after.
Yeah,
you see, he's emphasizing Varnashram. He's emphasizing this point of how everything's Krishna. Because in using Varnashram, you're dealing with the material energy in a wider range. You see everything. Because if you're not, you're just dealing with, as we mentioned, just the brahminical aspect of Varnashram. So brahminical activities and the four ashrams. Like, because sometimes it was said, it's not seen, it'll be seen, oh, but we're not dealing with the varnas. It's ashram. But the ashrams, brahminical varna means you're following the brahminical ashrams. Right? They go together as one. Then you add on to that, then Kshatriya Varna, Vaishya Varna, Shudra Varna, because they don't have ashrams. You know what I'm saying? The ashram is brahminical. Right? So, meaning that there's no separate Kshatriya ashrams. Right? Ashrams means it's coming from the brahminical standard. Then you have the brahminical occupation. Then you can have occupations in support of that. As Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra. Like, so that means it's Satya Yuga, which is the biggest of all the yugas. Then it goes along perfectly just by following those five. Mm-hmm. Right? Only in Treta then you introduce the other three varnas. So if you're just engaged in the temple life and the Samkirtan, you can see everything connected to that. You go out on the street, you know, what's good for Samkirtan, what's good for things in the temple, the worship, you go to the market, okay, what's nice for the deities. You can see like that and you don't need. Now, if you're going to deal with Varnashram, then you actually need to be able to see that all the things you're working with are connected to Krishna. So therefore that point is that everything is Krishna, everything and Krishna is everything, becomes a very prominent point being made. You know, especially starting from the ninth canto, but you know, very much emphasized in the tenth. You know, so you see is that way all the instructions before you see in that context. So it's not that the others aren't important, it's just, you see, that's the essential point. So, yad yugata vichidyad adakshinena yajeta yadi pratiharta sarvasva dakshi nena. If the Udgata priest, chanter of Samaveda, drops with waist cloth of the priest in front while circumambulating the fire after the sacrifice should be repeated. And no donation should be given. If the Pratiharta, chanter of Rigved, drops the waist cloth of the priest in front of him while circumambulating the fire, the sacrifice should be repeated with full donation given to the priest. If the two priests, one after the other, drop the waist cloth, the sacrifice must be repeated with full donation according to the latter rule. Right? So, this is rules. For everyone who says, oh, but we chant Hare Krishna, we don't care for the rules. This is a rule. What we've been given, that's Pancharatra, that's not a rule. That's just common sense. I mean, that's just what you're supposed to do. This is a rule.
That's so stupid.
Why would they drop
it? It just means...
accidentally?
Yeah, it means you put your cloth around the waist, but have you ever...
No.
Have you been in South India at all?
No.
No. You see them when they're having programs, they're constantly fixing. That's just what they do. Yeah. You know, just like in North, girls are constantly playing with the sari, so they're constantly doing that. So if in doing that, they're walking, they're going to get up to go around. When you're sitting down, yeah, like this. Then when you stand up, then it gets, you know, so you're, in, you know, so, yeah. So then if it falls, then you understand, then it has to be repeated. It's an omen, so therefore if it's something's wrong in the sacrifices will come up, so you'll take this that something was wrong in the sacrifice. Right, so then if the Samaveda drops it, that means it's redone and there's no dakshin because there's something wrong with them. If it's redone with the Rigveda, then it's redone, but the dakshin in full is given. I mean, or yeah, let's say, did it say dakshin? In front of him, first dakshin, repeat, donation, with full donation, yeah, given to the priest. And so therefore then it's that it's something has been, it's not the priest's fault. It may be something else in the ingredient, something he didn't know. But if both of them, that means there may have been something in both, but he's corrected his mentality, and so therefore he can get the full donation. So they know all these things, so they can tell. It means it happens to us probably all the time, we don't know what's going on.
What's a waistcloth?
Yeah, in other words, he didn't even have a waistcloth, he says. So.
The effect of the woman also depends, like it changes according to the person. The effect of the omen,
yes, it changes on the person and the different, yeah. The direction and everything like that. So that's why it says, you know, the Samvedi or the Rigvedi, like that. Yes, it's a whole science.
That's why we don't go to South.
Yes. So this is when we say we've been saved from ritual and we've just been given the essence. What we have, that's human life. Less than that, you can drop those rules, but then it's not human. Right? But we can take inspiration from Shivananda Sen's dog that he did go back to Godhead and he wasn't human. Along with those fish with Ramanujacharya, you know, like that, yeah.
Not so many.
No, it's a little less. Yeah, yeah. So that's why it's recommended, you know, following these principles, because it's basically when you say motor good, it means that then you're human. Like that. It's progressive. Like that. You may follow those rules, but in passion. So that's the lower end of it, but it's still human. But when you drop into ignorance, you don't follow the rules, so it's not human. It's subhuman. Like that. It just goes down.
Actually, devotees will appreciate whatever Prabhupada is giving to us only if they have knowledge of what in Vedic style goes on.
It means you can't have that faith without having this. This is here as a net, just like
because everybody now requires
the trapeze artist. He doesn't require a net, but if it's there, it's nice. Because if something does happen, then it's there to catch. So that's the whole point, is the Varnashram is there to catch if you slip from if you slip from Bhagavat, Pancharatra will catch you. If you slip from Pancharatra, the Vedic will catch you. And if you slip from there, then we get out the Highway to Hell song. Yes, like that. Yes. Good. No?
Yes.
Why not? When two contradicting methods of atonement are described without any way of combining them, e.g. if both Udgata and Pratiharta fail to perform circumambulation properly, the one mentioned latter in the same scripture is taken as the method. Mm-hmm. Right? Because it'll give an order. Mm-hmm. So there's a meaning to that. So that's always you taken there. I worship the Supreme Lord Govinda, who, though appearing in the worlds in eternal forms as Rama and Nrisimha with their characteristic powers, also appears personally in the supreme form of Krishna with the most attractive pastimes, Brahma Samhita 539. Right? Now applying this rule, what do we glean from this? Then Krishna, Swayam Krishna, is the supreme, not Rama, Nrisimha, and other avatars. As the same way as in that previous one. All avatars mentioned and not mentioned are portions of the Purusha empowered jivas create happiness in the world whenever it's afflicted by the demons and their ideas. But Krishna is the ultimate form of Bhagavan. That's the latter, it's taken as the higher. So it's always put in that form. Is that good?
Yes.
Good. Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanand. Okay, so yeah, you have to mention there's no class tomorrow because of the Mahabhishek.
Monday.
Monday. Yeah.